And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 844. Going to recap your week three Fab OCs, main events, and more. Get some listener questions, talk some recent news, keep you up to date around the fantasy baseball world. But before we do that, you can follow me on Twitter at BD Entrick and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Benton, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing pretty good, Bubba. Another week of fantasy baseball to talk about. And saw a Yankees win on Friday. So I was there for the home opener, so that was pretty awesome. But yeah, looking forward. It was a pretty busy week in Fab. I think everybody kind of woke up. So we should have a pretty good amount of players to talk about tonight.
It was a busy week in Fab. It was also a week where the pricing was all over the board, is what I'll say. Because you, me, and Ryan were texting, and then when we talked about, like, well, who won who and the different prices, and then we're going to look at prices, obviously, tonight, it varied quite a bit, not just in the OCs. It was kind of – I wouldn't say it was a get-your-guy week because it's way too early for that, but it felt like that at points for certain players. Like, you got to go get your guy, and we'll see if that pans out. Some people say spend early because you get them the longest. Some say – save your money till you have money throughout the season. Who knows? So we'll get to all of that. But before we get to the Fab, couple bits of news here. And it's some big player news. It's not like you're kind of C-tier guys. These are the A-class. I'll start with Juan Soto. On Monday, the Mets officially put him on the IL with a calf strain. It's going to be about 2 to 3 weeks, which I guess would usually mean probably a grade 2 calf strain or something like that. They didn't specify. But Soto's out 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to talk Mark Vientos later, one of the big names of the week. He might get a bump here. But what's your thoughts here with the whole Soto situation? Polanco can only play like half the time and has to DH right now. There's some problems in Queens. I know it breaks your heart, but there's some problems over there.
Oh, yeah, big time. Yeah, as I'm wearing my Yankee shirt. With Soto, yeah, you mentioned Mark Vientos, and we'll talk about him for my ads. And then, of course, he's one of the top two, I think, ads from OC's and main events from yesterday. So this definitely hurts for Soto managers. 2 to 3, I feel like, would be a grade 1. And then
you're probably right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's good for Soto, for his outlook. But it's very easy, though, if you were not fully healed and you start running out again, for you to aggravate it. Because I'm not saying I'm a MLB athlete, but I did hurt my calf playing pickleball last year, and it took a while. I think I had a grade 2, though. It was a little bit more than a 1, but I just know that it pulls every time you step. So if Soto has a boot or something, that'll help. But if anything, it could have kind of hurt his steals. I don't know if he had any steals yet, but everyone's big question with Soto was how many will he get this year after stealing 38, I think, last year. And this will not help him get anywhere close to that again, unless he's fully healed and starts feeling comfortable with running on it. But he's got to hope that he takes his time and doesn't re-aggravate it as he ramps back up.
Yeah, that was my big question with Soto during draft seasons. Like, obviously, what's the steals going to be? Kind of kept me off of him because it's one of those big jumps. Like, we're seeing him, like, Baylor's not running yet. Still super early. But you kind of always have those questions to those guys that take the big jumps. And time will tell. I'd imagine he's not running much anytime soon because he pulled it in San Francisco running from first to third. So it could be a 2 to 3 week deal, like they said, and hopefully not too much longer than that. Hunter Brown on the IL, right shoulder strain. And this is a weird one, Ben. I do not feel great about. Let's just put it this way, because the news took place. Hunter Brown was in Sacramento as the Astros are facing the A's, gets the MRI. No one says the results. They said they got the MRI. Now he's flying back to Houston to meet with team doctors to get their opinion, which they didn't say second opinion, but it feels like if you got the MRI here, that would be a second one to me. Don't know. And it's still no news yet, and we're recording on Monday evening at 7:20 in your world, 4:20 in mine. Still nothing. And the Astros beat reporters today said they're in Colorado. No news yet. So usually the longer this takes makes me think it's not great, Ben. But what's your thoughts on Hunter Brown, who was having, you know, control issues in his last start?
Yeah, the walk rate was pretty elevated this year, 14%, which very abnormal for him, but he is getting a lot of strikeouts at the same time. I won't make a. I have a Mitch Keller joke I could make. I'm not going to say it though because I know that could be sensitive.
I don't have much Hunter Brown this year, so you can do what you wish. It's fine.
I was going to say Mitch Keller could end up being a better pick than Hunter Brown this year.
Yeah, right about now, that would have been a great beer bet. It would have worked out well.
I'm not even saying they're the same play. I'm just saying Mitch Keller could be better now. I don't know. We'll see. I hope that's not the case. I don't want anyone to be hurt. But this is more proof though that, and I've heard it on other pods, not just today with like the RotoWire pod from yesterday, but all throughout draft season and last year, no one is safe as a pitcher. Hunter Brown had 155 innings in 2023, 170 in 2024, and last year was 185. So a pretty gradual increase. And then, of course, like if he's back in a short amount of time, then it's not as big of a deal. But if it's a significant injury, then the notion that relatively young can has shown to reach a high workload in innings. Look at Logan Gilbert last year. You never know who's going to get hurt. So that's kind of why I didn't elevate Hunter Brown, because of the perceived volume that will lead to a high K rate, which I thought was elevated despite his swing and strike rate. The swing and strike rate never really justified his K rate. And then if you add on the extra innings, okay, then you're looking at a legit ace in fantasy. But just going off of the skill, like I wanted Cole Reagans more. So someone may say, okay, that's a crazy thing to say because Brown's – what was that?
I said, I'm not going to argue that.
Oh, and I know. Yeah, you're going to be right there with me. Yeah, so I was going off the skills with Reagans because he was hurt last year, came back. It doesn't mean that he's not going to get hurt, but Brown not getting hurt last year doesn't mean he's not going to get hurt this year. So just if you're going to go into next year, you, the listeners, because you think someone's a safe starter – I'd rather focus on the skills of the other elite starters and then just hopefully you get lucky, because you do need luck to win at this. And this is just an unlucky injury for Hunter Brown.
Yeah, it's unlucky. We, again, don't know the severity of it. It, like I said, just doesn't seem good that it's taking this long to come out and say anything about what's taking place here. Hopefully it's not too bad, but I'm expecting the worst. Side note, on Monday night, they got Colton Gordon starting in Coors, and they said Ryan Weiss is going to piggyback, so that's how they're filling this trip through the rotation. They also said after Thursday, they were already planning on doing this before the injury to Brown. They said it again on Monday, the Astros, that is. They said they're still going to a six-man rotation starting after Thursday's game because they have, like, 13 games in a row, and they want to, like, Emi and all those guys, like McCullers. Like, they have a bunch of guys that obviously need as much rest as possible, I'd imagine. So Arrighetti was kind of already on path there. Ryan Weiss, who's been the long man, maybe he steps into the rotation. There's Colton Gordon, who we mentioned. A lot of ways to go about it, so I'll have to see how that plays out this week for Fab next week. But I have been mentioning grabbing Spencer Arrighetti where you can for cheap, and that might come to fruition sooner than later. But, yeah, keep an eye on this Hunter Brown news. It does not sound great. Mookie Betts went to the IL with an oblique strain. He, on Monday, he said he's feeling a lot better than he expected. We'll see how that plays out. But he's going to be out for, you know, at least till middle of next week, maybe a little longer, one would imagine. Any thoughts on this Mookie Betts situation, as he wasn't really running much to start the season? The power wasn't bad, but he wasn't running. So I've been a Betts fade most of my time on these airwaves. But what's your thoughts on this oblique strain for Mookie Betts?
Well, kind of like with the last one with Hunter Brown, I'm glad I dodged this one because I don't have Mookie Betts anywhere. I thought the aging was a legit issue with his decline in production, not just the injuries. And this is I heard that he did have two homers so far, Betts, so maybe he was bouncing back from the illness he had last year, the virus that caused him to lose all that weight. But now we can't really tell. And then if he does come back, same thing with Juan Soto, like I said before, if hopefully Mookie's fully healthy when he gets back, because it's very easy to re-aggravate the oblique if you're not 100%. And just got to hope that it's, if you have Mookie on your team, just got to hope that it's, there's no setbacks, and it's probably on the 4-week timetable, but I wouldn't get my hopes up. You never really know. It's and also, since he's older too, it could take longer for him to heal. He's got to hold tight.
Yeah, Hyesung Kim was recalled. He's supposed to share shortstop duties with Miguel Rojas. Kim got the start on Monday night, so we'll see how that goes. Alex Freeland is supposed to be penciled in at second base. That's the guy I would look to in Fab if you're looking for some middle infield help. While Betts is out, just know Betts, again, is supposed to be back hopefully the end of next week is what it appears to be, unless there is a setback, as was mentioned. A big bummer here for the Toronto Blue Jays and fantasy managers everywhere. We have Alejandro Kirk will have surgery on his fractured thumb. It's on his catching hand, so it's not one like he could be, oh, he'll be okay, he'll come back to what's got to be healed type thing to be able to catch fastballs and all that good stuff. So Kirk's, there's no timetable. They said after the surgery, they'll know the timetable, like once they know exactly how the surgery went. I've heard stuff, it's usually like 2 to 3 months just because he's a catcher, but we'll have to wait. I hopefully it's closer to two. Again, we won't know a time frame till Tuesday or Wednesday. Ben, right now they called up Brandon Valenzuela. He caught on Sunday. He's going to be the backup catcher to Tyler Heineman at this point in time. With the duration of Kirk's deal, maybe they go and get someone else. Who knows? What's your thoughts here? Like, let's just say we find out it's a 2 to 3 month deal and you have Alejandro Kirk. Are you stashing him?
I'm trying to think that as you were talking, Bub. I only have Kirk in a DC, so I don't have that issue, fortunately for myself. But I would say in a NFBC type format with no IL, I would probably drop him, I think.
I agree. It's tough to stash. Like, yeah, you're hoping a full season, you hope to get 15 home runs. Now, if he's only playing a half a season, it's like you can stream 7 home runs. You want the batting average. That's hard to find, but he's got to come back healthy. There's a lot of question marks is what I'll say when it comes to the Kirk situation. So I'd be dropping as well. Let's wait and hear the news first. If it's like only a month, maybe hold if you can. But when you get to the 2 to 3 months, it's a little different. All right, two pitching injuries for the Cubbies. Cade Horton left his last start with a right forearm strain. They placed him on the IL, and he's undergoing further testing, and the team wishes him the best. So that quote was amazing. I was just like, good. We got the Hunter Brown situation where no one says a word. And now you got the Cubs, like, we wish him the best. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. So what are your thoughts here at Cade Horton? Because he seems like he might be done.
Doesn't sound good. I didn't have Cade Horton anywhere, so I didn't have to worry about this decision last night. I did hear that Justin Mason dropped Horton right away, so that's a pretty good analyst to take advice from. You'd like to know exactly what's going on, but it could very well be Tommy John or a flexor strain, and either one. Of course, the flexor strain may not be as bad as Tommy John, but it's probably going to be a long absence for Horton, so I would probably say, similarly to Kirk, if you don't have an IL, if you haven't dropped at Horton yet, just wait and see. Hopefully there's some news by Sunday. There should be. And then if it's not good, then you just drop him.
Adam Brunchen of the chat says, I've heard obituary is more subtle than basically the quote the Cubs gave. I wish him the best.
That's a good one.
Was there another like little phrase like that in there? It was multiple like, oh, he's doing, or just like, go get him, Tiger type thing. This is just weird situation. The other one that dropped on Monday, Matthew Boyd to the IL with a strained left bicep. Okay, that sounds really bad to me. And now then the Cubs like quickly said, oh, they only expected to miss the minimum time. Going into the draft season, I was very sketchy on Boyd. Like, I have him as an SP4 and an OC we were talking about. Like, I was fine at that point. I have him in some DCs because I was like, okay, get what you can get out of him, and then he's done. Because the innings increase last year, I was like dreading what he's going to put together this year. This happened a lot sooner than I thought, and the whole minimum IL stint with a bicep strain just doesn't sound about right. But what are your thoughts on this one, Ben?
Yeah, and the second Cub in a row that just went down, yeah. Not good. I didn't have Boyd either, luckily for my fantasy teams. So I don't have to make a decision, but if it's a strained biceps, I doubt it would be that quick. Because you're not really throwing with your biceps, so it's kind of weird how he ended up straining it to begin with. But he's also 35, Boyd. Could take him a while to heal. Kind of, like you said, he kind of collapsed end of last year. So the replacements for both guys, well, I'll say that now, is Ryan's favorite, Javier Assad, and then Colin Ray, who was actually – I actually had some bids in Fab last night. But the other interesting player, depending on the outlook for both Boyd and Cade Horton, would be – I got to find if he's in the – I think – well, it's Jackson Wiggins. He's their top prospect, the Cubs. And if he gets called up, he could go for a pretty good price. But, well, the Cubs are competitive, so it's not unlikely that Assad and or Ray are terrible, and then maybe they have to make a move and call up Wiggins. I don't know how stretched out he is. I mean, how ready he is for the majors, but he is almost 25. And he's their third, actually not even ranked for this year for their organization, but I'm sure he's a top five prospect for the Cubs. So if there's a good chance he could get called up pretty soon. And that's Jackson Wiggins.
Jackson Wiggins is a really good call, because that's one that maybe wouldn't have been on the table until the second one, because like you mentioned, Colin Ray is joining the rotation. They called up the facade. Everybody wants it to be Ben Brown, but like Ben Brown's just, we think, it seems like he's built for the bullpen. They did use him in long relief the other day, but like he's got the goods to pitch in the back end of that rotation or bullpen if they need him to. But yeah, you got Justin Steele that's supposed to come back eventually. Like their IL of pitchers, Boyd, Horton, Steele, even Jordan Wicks, like that's a starting rotation. That foursome is better than a lot of starting rotations in baseball right now. And it's all on the IL. So you just hope for the minimum, but I like the shout for the minor leaguers to keep an eye on, because when you look at the rest of their system, there's like after Wiggins, they've like Vince Velasquez is down there, Ben.
I saw it. I didn't want to say his name. Been there too many
like,
times in the past.
That's, man. Like really though, him or Facade, that's it's not that far off.
I'd rather have Velasquez and Javier Assad.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm like, it's actually not that crazy. So we'll see. Hopefully these injuries are minimal, but yeah, I don't know. Like I feel like there's gonna be some trades getting made here pretty. Maybe Matt Shaw finally gets dealt. Like here we go. And then one of these days we'll find out why Lucas Giolito still isn't signed yet. Like his arm must be broken and we just don't know about it.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
It makes no sense at all. Cause by the time you sign, like the Jays did the great thing and signed Patrick Corbin, geniuses. He'll be in the rotation in no time. The Cubs could use him right about now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's get after it. Week three Fab. We'll be using Ryan's Fab tracker from the Bubba and Bloom Patreon. We'll also be using the NFBC page, much more. We'll talk OCs. We'll talk main events. We'll give a little bit of, you know, the drops. All the good stuff, Ben, but before I get your thoughts in general, just to let people know, last year, week three main events on amount spent per team was $54. This year, $48. But the remaining balance is identical to last year of $909 on average, obviously, per team. So spending has jumped each week, but it's still on track for the last season's pace. OCs, similar. 2025, $53 was spent per team on average, $58 this year. The average remaining per team last year was $862. This year's $866. I have one OC where I'm like at $960 right now, which is, or not an OC, an OLAC, I think, which feels weird, but I digress. What's your thoughts on, you mentioned this was a busy week, an active week, a big week. What was your thoughts on how it went? Because just looking at the general spending, it wasn't crazy, especially once we started talking about a couple players that took some massive bids.
Right. Yeah. So last year was $54 in week three. And I remember looking last week at how it spiked up from week two to three in the mains. So I was expecting that today, but there was more separation last year between week two and three in the mains versus the $11 difference between week two and week three this year. But it, like you said, it averaged out in the end. So we're on the same pace, which is kind of interesting. And yeah, and it's there's actually a pretty big difference between OLEX and the mains and the early spending, which is kind of surprising, but I think maybe at the same time too, OLEX start drafting in January. So maybe there's more bigger ads that are on the table 100%. Come week one. Whereas the mains, like half of them don't draft like until you can, by the time the first week of Fab runs around, there's like probably a third of mains that haven't been drafted yet. So that's could be a piece of it. Why? But yeah, I myself contributed to the higher spend in the main event, just because some players emerged and a little bigger sample size for being able to drop someone and just being like, okay, I could probably use help here.
Yeah, I love Jason Wannick here. The chat says McCullers went for 337 in his main with the runner-up of 47. Oh, we're going to get to that stuff, Jason. Don't you worry, because there's some that before the show we were talking. Usually we joke with the OC because it's just all over the board, and the main event usually has a little more structure to it. This week, didn't matter if you were in the OLAC, the ACs, the OCs, the main events, didn't matter what format you were in. It was just different all over the place, and it was very, very interesting. So let's get to it, Ben. We will use like the sheet as mentioned, And we will talk about, we'll start with OCs, of course, and then we'll highlight some main events and other things later. But the most added players in the NFBC online championship, 12-team leagues, Liam Hicks was added in 211 leagues. There was a max of 226, a min of $1. Bless you, folks. Average $39. That was much more understandable. I guess I'll throw the main out there. He was added in 50 main events, been at a high of 273, a low of $6, and an average of 64. So Hicks averaged 64 in the main events, 39 in the OCs. Obviously, 15 teams in a main. There's 30 catchers. Makes a little sense. But what were your thoughts on this? Because I know you were in the market for Liam Hicks.
Yeah, definitely was. I believe I added Hicks on two of my four fab teams. And I'll start with the stat cast for Hicks. He is 90th percentile, or at least 90th percentile in xWOBA, xBA, xSlug, squared up, percent, chase percent, whiff percent, K percent. His barrel rate 75th percentile, 12.5%. The only thing that's not above average for him is his walk rate and his bat speed on Savant, which is fine. I know people are pretty horned for bat speed nowadays, and you can get by without having an elite bat speed. Sometimes it actually hurts you. So I'm not worried about that, as long as the velo is there on the balls that he hits. That's really that matters. And I think you're seeing that with the squared up percent being so high in elite. So he's making awesome contact. I know you could probably share it after, but he made some sort of change to his stance, Hicks, that's really paying off. And the one thing that also stood out for me too, before I pass it back to you, is just the playing time. So he's the Marlins have faced an abnormally high amount of lefties. It feels like they've faced five already, and they've had 10 games. And Hicks at least faced one of them, and he hit eighth in that game. But he also played first base once. So I think that his playing time is pretty safe between catcher, first, and DH. So I think that's why he's an appealing ad, and I think he's worth – and I spent more on Hicks than the averages that you mentioned before. I think I was more in line with the main event average, I believe, which kind of makes sense for my one main event where I did get him. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and I didn't expect Hicks to be an ad like this during draft season. He wasn't really on my radar because we have the Goose, and then also Joe Mack is a top catching prospect for the Marlins. But the way that Hicks is hitting, we might not see Joe Mack for a while.
Yeah, Joe Mack's the biggest loser in this situation because unless they just give up on Goose, which would be insane. But seven main events over $100. There was 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 OCs over $100. I'll give the king his props. He was all over Liam Hicks during draft season. So good for him on that one. I didn't expect him to get this kind of playing time. I thought he was a good DC pick, but and I think many did because that's why he was available in so many leagues. He wasn't a regular redraft pick. But the swing thing is Fish on First, one of the blogs for the Marlins. There's videos of it. They have a tweet from April 2nd that he did some swing mechanic adjustments. He has had a toe tap last year with his right leg, right foot. Now he has like a big leg kick, and I guess he was working on it towards the end of last year and specialized in it in the offseason, and it's allowing him to pull the ball with a ton of power. And it's just because basically the leg kick's allowing him to basically get the hips going is what makes sense if you played baseball. Mechanics to swing and pull the ball with authority. So he's made the adjustments. I was telling Ben before the show, like, I'm not going to compare him to Bryce Terang, but those are the little things we saw him do last year, and it stuck. So it's like this time of year, you got to take your chances. So, like, I understood people wanting to go get Liam Hicks. Like, the prices are crazy to me. I didn't mind your prices. The average prices are awesome. I think I was where I needed catchers. I think I was in like the $30 to $40 range for Hicks. But didn't get him anywhere, if that tells you anything. But I think he's good. It was a combination of how sustainable is success, and he will sit. They've shown it now that subject to change, he will sit versus every lefty. So most weeks, that still means he probably plays four or five games. Totally fine as your catcher, too. That works. But just know he's like not going to get the full run. Like Goose still plays nearly every day, even between DH and catcher. That's the guy they want out there. But Hicks is proving it's tough to keep him off the diamond right now. There's no denying that. All right, the second most added player. This is a great discussion point as well here. Gregory Soto of the Pittsburgh Pirates added in 202 online championships. Let's get weird, folks. Max bid of 321 for Gregory Soto. 320, nearly a third of your fab budget by week three on a halftime closer, potentially. 321 max, $8 min. In main events, he was added in 12 main events because probably widely rostered there. A max of 303 with a min of 77. Again, more teams, you need to get what you can get there. So I expect those kind of situations to be higher in mains, Ben. But I was in on Soto, didn't get Soto because I'm just a timid guy. And I still think Dennis Santana gets plenty of run. But I will say Soto has been outstanding when they've utilized and picked up. Didn't help he got a save on Sunday, I believe. That probably helped spike the price here. Or no, it was a save on Friday. Sorry. But then Santana got the win on Saturday. So it's like it's going to go back and forth, I think, Ben. Where are we at on this situation?
I want to say that Soto was already rostered in my fab leagues where I could have used closer help. So it kind of helped my decision-making. Depends on where you look. So if you look at Fangraphs, they say they're cool. Actually, it's kind of the same deal. Fangraphs has Santana on top of the bullpen hierarchy, but they also have Soto as a closer, so it was probably splitting the committee in terms of Fangraphs, what they think. If you go to Closer Monkey, which is also part of Reliever Recon, they have it with Soto as the lead in the committee, and then Santana is behind him. Of course, Soto is a lefty, which probably plays a role into how they get used. But then the Pirates have three lefties total. They have Hunter Barco, who actually hasn't been that good. He's more of like a long man. And then Mason Montgomery, who people have been pretty excited for in the past, but I think he's been a little wild or hasn't had the best start from what I recall. Yeah, Montgomery's got a 9.6 ERA, so he's not too reliable right now. Because of that, maybe they might need Soto more often earlier in the game versus like a strong section of lefties in a lineup. So I think Santana will probably still have value. I wouldn't have gone crazy for Soto. I would have definitely been below $100 in my 15 teamers if I were to bid on Soto. But with that said, his underlying numbers are awesome. He has an 18.5 K per nine, which is a 52% K rate.
Yeah,
and a sub 10 walk rates. So that's a 42.9% K minus walk. That feels like Mason Miller-esque.
He's been great.
Yeah, the swing strike rate for Soto, just to cap it off, where are you? 17.6% swing strike rate for Soto. Granted, small sample, but he's been electric. So he has the closer stuff, but it's the Pirates. I don't know. They did acquire Soto, I don't know if it was last year or this offseason.
This offseason.
So they went out to get him. So I don't know. It's a risky bid when you bid that much, like on the super high end, but somewhere in the 60s to 80s, maybe I would be comfortable with, but I wouldn't have gone higher than that.
Yeah, no, I was all about putting bids in on him. Like I said, it's only Santana gets his. They said before the season started they were going to, you know, share the closing role. So like you kind of knew this coming into it. I think Soto's very good. He's pitching out of his mind right now. How's this, like, does he revert back closer to what he's been before, or is he a new developed guy? Like, what do we have here? Because he's had closing experience in the past, never been the elite guy. But he had 30 saves in 2022, 18 in 2021. Then he kind of fell off for a couple years. He's got goods, and I could see him getting his. But, yeah, to your point, like, I feel like he's going to get utilized in a lot more leverage roles just because of that swing and miss stuff that he has. Where Santana doesn't seem as dominating as that. Santana's been good, don't get me wrong. But, and especially to your point, if like Barco and Montgomery aren't getting it done, they're going to have to use Soto in those lefty roles. So we'll see how it goes. I was all about it, but it's like you start spending so much money for like, what, 15 saves? Like, yeah, that 15 saves help, don't get me wrong. But it's just the price per save starts to get a little wonky for me. Mr. Grouch says, I got Soto last week cheap because you mentioned him then. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Grouch is in the Patreon. Jason Wanick says, I drafted Santana and took Soto with the very last pick of the draft. Every now and then Wanick does a good thing. I'll give him credit on that. And then Adam says, I got Soto for 77. Runner up was 58. Needed him bad on my OC, 25th overall with only two saves. You know, that's where it makes sense. Team context wise, like even if he gets you 15 saves, it pans out. It just depends. Do you play three closers and stuff like that, I guess. All right, let's get to the next one. The third most added player in the OCs. Now, this is one where our texts were going back and forth, or at least you're in Ryan's for the most part. Lance McCullers Jr. added in 187 OCs, as high as 331. As low as a dollar, as you'd come to expect in this wonderful world. He was added in 46 main events, Ben. A max of 337. A min of 8, average of 75. McCullers was an average of 30 in OCs. I know you were in the Lance McCullers business this weekend. Not sure how much you got of him. I can't remember what you told us earlier, but I put in like $11 bids. I was not going all in for Lance McCullers, and his Sunday start didn't help his cause at all. So what's your take on Lance McCullers, who had that two-step last week and maybe fooled people? Who knows?
I will have to wait and see, but I'm surprised you mentioned the dead start on Sunday or Saturday, whichever it was. I'm surprised it didn't lower the prices more, because it certainly lowered my bid, my multiple bids on McCullers after seeing, okay, he's not as good potentially as the first start against the Red Sox made us, or at least made me think. So just to recap, in game one of last week, McCullers shut out the Red Sox. One run, 9 Ks, 1 walk, 7 innings. So that was an that was really what got everyone's attention. And there, versus the A's in Sacramento, okay, not the best place to pitch. 4 innings, 5 hits, 3 walks, 4 Ks, 3 runs. So a whip of 2, not the best ERA. A lot fewer strikeouts. So it kind of balanced everything out, though. So for the week, he had like a 3.27 ERA, 1.18 whip. So it was a very good first week for McCullers. The thing that stood out to me was he changed his arsenal a ton. Let me go through his let's go to McCullers Savant real quick. One of the things that he did this year compared to 2025 is he raised his cutter usage a ton. It was around 5% last year. It was 32% this year. And then at the same time, he dropped his sweeper, it looks like, from 32% to just under 9% in this start. Sinker about the same. Knuckle curve about the same. Dropped the changeup as well. So really it was the cutter that changed a lot, and it got an XBA of 212 so far with an XWOBA 314. So it's that cutter usage has been huge for McCullers. And this is across the two starts, these numbers. So it's evened out, because you wouldn't expect him to do what he did against the Red Sox all the time. So just after the first start and seeing the results from McCullers is what got my interest. I'm not one to look into all the pitch shapes and all that, but I will at least look at the changes in what he's throwing. And Ryan does this as well with the live Bloom board. That's one of his things, is Ryan's pitch metric, that pitch change metric that everyone can find on the Patreon. So with that said, McCullers kind of went back down to earth, but his underlying estimators are still, for like the ERA, his xERA is 3.59. So that's fine. FIP is 1.93. That's because he didn't get a homer yet. And then xFIP is 2.68. So everything looks good. Still, he has a, his K rate is 31% after the two starts, which it's only two starts, but that would be a career high. The walk rate has been an issue for him in the past, but it's only been 9.5%. He's above 11 the last 3 years. Actually, for his career, he had a kind of a bad walk rate, McCullers. So I know I didn't get him this week, McCullers. We'll go over that in Fab, because I was more in the 40s, and that was below 50, like below the median for the main events. But if everyone remembers, I got him for $4 last week. I didn't start him because I wasn't planning on it. I just wanted to see what would happen. So I saved a lot of money by being proactive there. I kind of got lucky, because he was probably at the bottom of my bid list if I got him for $4. So sometimes it's better to be lucky than good.
I have a situation like that for a different pitcher we'll talk about on my pickups for the week. But yeah, no, the $4, I'll take $4 stabs on a lot of pitchers. Like, zero concerns about that. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, yeah, $4 might matter in the last week of the year, but throughout the year, yeah, that's okay. You make those moves. But yeah, I knew the spinning was going to be up. We talked about it in our chat. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that for Lance McCullers, because again, like, we never want anybody to get hurt. That's just the reality of the situation. But at the same time, I'm like, I'd be shocked if he pitches over 100 innings this year. Like, hey, if you get 100, they'll take him for $4 all day long and see where it goes. But some of these guys spending 300, like a third of their budgets again, gets a little rough. As Jason in the chat says, Bloomfield got him 29 versus 29 in the Las Vegas League. Lucky bastard. I don't know if it's lucky because that means his team's worse. So that's why he won. It's like the old beer pong thing. When you win, you win. When you lose, you win. It's kind of the situation with when you win the tying fab bid, it's not always the best indicator of your team.
It's like a pity win.
Yes, it's a pity win. And no one wants a pity win, especially in week three of fantasy. That's a bad sign. Mike Soroka, the fourth most added player in the online championships, added in 160 leagues, as high as 132, as low as a dollar, averaged out to $43 per player add for Mike Soroka in OCs. Not too shabby there. He was widely rostered in main events. So we don't have to bring him up. He's all over the board. But Mike Soroka, this is one, Ben, I was in the Discord and our chats after his first start, five shutout innings, one walk, 10 Ks, and I dropped him that weekend. So I was like, oh, this is just awesome. Then it was five innings, one run, three walks, 3 K. Still not a horrible start, but that much more Soroka-like to me. And I'm thinking, okay, that's a streamable guy, not maybe the 10 K dude. Maybe I'm still wrong. Very possible. Happens often. What are your thoughts on Mike Soroka? Because some people love them. Again, you could still sneak him through for a dollar in an OC.
Yeah, he kind of has a little bit of the Hunter Brown going on. Not shoulder injury, Hunter Brown, but the lack of swing strike rate versus high K rate. This happened for Soroka last year, who I was pretty high on Soroka when he was healthy last year because his whip was great, and it was like 1.13 for the however long he pitched. It was only 89 innings. But it's still good. It's still a good ratio for that amount of innings. But now Soroka has a 31% K rate so far in two starts, where the swinging strike rate is 10%. So it should be closer to 20% if you go by the rule of thumb to just kind of double your swinging strike rate to get an estimate of what your K rate should probably be closer to. So in small samples, that stuff like that can happen. Unless you're Hunter Brown, you do it over two full years. And then with Soroka, yeah, so the three walks is concerning. In the last start compared to 3Ks, it was the Braves they have a solid team, but yeah, he was drafted in main events, like you said, so I didn't have a chance to add him. But in an OC, I wouldn't have been maybe as aggressive because of the low swing strike rate. I feel like it's going to catch up to him eventually, and Soroka probably can't maintain a high 20s K rate if it's that low. So we'll have to wait and see. But, and also too, the D-backs are a mess. Their hitting is better than the pitching, so maybe he has a chance at wins. Yeah. He has two already, actually, in his first two starts, so that's also pretty valuable, but you're not going to get those wins once you add him. Yep. So I wouldn't have gone too crazy on Soroka. I would have liked him as a flyer, but he's probably more injury-prone than McCullers has been. So just don't expect him to hold up all year.
Yeah, like I it was one of like my last picks, and a lot of drafts are close to last picks, so that when – you know, like guys I added him for that week, I'm thinking, okay, we're going to take a chance on them. And Soroka, you're gone, and throws the 10Ks out there. So we'll see how it goes. I'm still not sold. You mentioned the swing and miss problems that could come into trouble against certain clubs, especially the one that wears blue and white in Southern California. So we'll see how that plays out. Next most added player in the online championships, we got another closer, Brian Baker of the Tampa Bay Rays. If you picked him up, he already got you a save before this recording on Monday. He looked actually pretty filthy, even though he gave up a home run to Matt Shaw. But Brian Baker added 155 OCs, as high as 171, as low as $5, an average of $40 for Brian Baker. He was also added in, I just saw it, where did it go? Oh, man, Bubba, you dumb. Oh, in seven main events, as high as 103, as low as 48, average of 84. So similar to Gregory Soto, pretty widely rostered in the mains, but in your 12-team leagues, Baker was out and about, Ben, 155 leagues, as high as 171, average of 40. Again, the 171, it's hard for me to stomach. I would rather have spent that on him than Soto, because I think Baker could actually keep the job over Jax. But I still obviously didn't do that. So where are you at on Brian Baker? Because you still have Griffin Jackson, who threw two shutout innings on Sunday night. He pitched the seventh and the eighth. You got you set to back in a couple weeks. That also kind of tempered my Brian Baker love. But where are you at on Brian Baker?
No fab teams do I have Brian Baker. I do have him in a handful of DCs. I actually played him in one DC where I do have Griffin Jackson. So I it feels like Jax has just been used as a fireman, and he hasn't really gotten a save chance, I don't think. I'd have to confirm
not
that.
Not in a while. Not in a while. If
do they show save opportunities? They don't on the screen. Oh, no, they don't. Actually, no, he has two blown saves. Griffin Jax does.
Yep.
They may not have been in the ninth, because I think they will consider it a blown save if you lose it in the eighth, for example. But either way, it's not helping his case to be the closer for the Rays. So it makes sense to go after Brian Baker. FanGraphs actually has him listed as the closer, Baker. And then going back to Closer Monkey, he's leading the committee there. It goes Baker, Jack, Seymour. I don't think Seymour is going to get saved anytime soon. So, like you mentioned, Baker had been added mostly the week before in the main events. The key, though, is did everyone start him? Because I've been caught in this where you add someone like this, and then you just want to wait and see, and then you miss out on the save, which was what happened today, potentially. So hopefully, if you did add Baker, you're able to use him. And, he was a pretty popular target, like I said, in late in DCs for me because of the skills from last year. And so far, the skills are arguably better through three innings for Baker. He actually has a higher K-minus walk than Soto. Baker has a 44% K rate and a 0% walk rate. So hasn't walked anyone yet. Probably struck out 4 out of 9 batters, roughly. That's what that would be. So he looks dominant. And I was never really concerned about Uceda when I was willing to draft Jax in draft season. Because Uceda had all of last year to be the closer, and he at least once Fairbanks was traded, and it never happened. So whether it's the Rays philosophy or they just don't trust Uceda, I don't think he's as much of a threat to the closer role as some others do. So at this point, it feels like Baker is the best bet, and because of that, I probably agree with you that you'd take him over Soto.
Yeah, I'm already thinking like maybe I should have been more aggressive in the OC where I think he was available. We'll go over the ad drops here shortly, but most 15 is not a chance for me. It must be nice because Timothy in our Discord, he mentioned he picked him up, I think, in 3 main events, and his Bubba in the Bloom Listener League, he was added in 7 main events, so almost half of them he had them available. Like those are the little gifts that keep on. Those are the kind of gifts that keep on giving right there, and when you get that luck ball. But it's the way the cookie crumbles. All right, next most added player in the OC is Max Muncy, Maximus Muncy of the Sacramento Athletics. Picked up in 143 OCs, as high as 101, as low as $2 or $3. Average bid of $34 for Muncy. He was not even picked up in mains because he was already drafted on rosters in mains. Max Muncy, the second base, third base eligibility is great, Ben. I've been a big fan all offseason. I have a lot of Muncy on my rosters. He's hit safely in all but 2 games this year. He's hitting .314, 2 homers, a steal. Took advantage of Sacramento over the weekend. Still strikes out over 33% of the time, which leaves the window open for problems. But right now he's maximizing things, no pun intended. So what's your thoughts on Max Muncy of the Sacramento Athletics?
That's too good of a pun you just had there, Bubba. I pulled up his Statcast, and yeah, it's looking awesome. You did mention the K rate, which is hurting his profile. 33% so far, but he does have a steal, 2 homers, hitting above 300. Despite the K rate, his XBA, Max Muncy of the Athletics, is 270, which is still pretty impressive. Small sample, of course, only 36 plate appearances. But yeah, he's going to get a massive boost when he's in Sacramento. I don't think they played a whole lot of games there yet. It's probably 50-50 or even less.
It was the first 3 games. He's played those 3 over the weekend. That's it. Then they're back on the road this week.
Yeah, so a lot more good things are on his way, presumably. And dual eligibility, second, third base, which is awesome. So yeah, I think because of the power and the speed, he's definitely appealing in an OC, and even just as much so in the main event where it's deeper rosters and third base is weak. So Muncy makes sense. Let me look at the prices. He was at this is a pretty good bid range, $34 for him with some decent upside. He's only 23 still, which means that there's room for growth for Muncy. So I like that add a lot.
Yep, he's like I either drafted him late or I picked him up like in the first, at least last week for sure, because I have him in a lot of leagues when I was setting lineups. I'm a believer. He made some adjustments his spring. He showed a ton of power, which is kind of the question last year, was the power going to be there? And It was there, and yes, spring, but he's carried it over already this season. And let's just be real, spring and playing in Sacramento half your games are pretty similar. So it kind of correlated in my brain, my dumb brain. So we'll roll with that. The next most added player in the NFBOC is Garrett Mitchell. God, it's great that I'm a Z early on this one. Garrett Mitchell picked up in 137 online championships, as high as 179 for Garrett Mitchell, as low as a dollar. Average bid of $44 for Garrett Mitchell. This is one that I should have picked up already. He was gone in mains. That wasn't an option. OC's hung around. Even like updated stats as he's playing right now. He's 0-for-2 tonight. He's hitting .292 on the season with a home run and 3 steals, 11 RBIs, been striking out over 40% of the time, which isn't great. He'll sit versus righty, so it's a platoon situation. He's doing the things offensively I believed he could do, minus please don't strike out so much. But what are your thoughts on Garrett Mitchell? Because it seems like the job is his, at least first right-handed pitching.
It is. And after 2 years probably of being in on Mitchell, I don't have him anywhere. I was just kind of over it with him getting injured all the time and the K rate. So there's a good chance that he comes crashing down. A kind of a similar profile on StatCast to Max Muncy, who we just talked about. The speed's there. The power metrics are there for the two of them. Mitchell has, like you said, the platoon concerns, which we can overcome in fantasy, especially when you're adding someone to your roster. It's not as big of a deal. So, yeah, this is a matter of health. I don't think he's ever – look at his standard stats. Mitchell, this is his fifth season. He's a career high of 69 games, 224 plate appearances. So he has to stay healthy, and he's never hit above – well, he got lucky in those short samples with his average the first 3 years. But last year he was at 206. So he won't be able to – he won't be a reliable contributor in fantasy if he has a 37% K rate like he does now. Mitchell, so you got to get that down. But it's like you were saying, it's been a problem for his entire career. So without improving that, this could be like a hot streak for him, and then you may not be playing him anymore, and then or you're even dropping Mitchell. But the talent's there. It's just a matter of can he make enough contact, and I don't want to bet that he will necessarily, but the prices are pretty cheap. He was going slightly above Muncy. His average was 44 in OC's Mitchell. Which is fine. It's worth the risk. I think he honestly has more upside than Muncy, because historically I have liked Mitchell's profile with the power and the speed, but I just don't have any expectations for him anymore.
Yeah, I'd have Muncy slightly ahead of him just for the playing time is more locked in, and that ballpark at home is awesome. Not that Milwaukee's ballpark is a pitcher heaven, but that's the biggest difference. Both of them have, I think, great skill sets. You're going to get power. You're going to get speed. Like, as long as they can just get the strikeouts intact, you get really good players there. So I was a fan of both of these guys. And at worst, like a Garrett Mitchell, even if he struggles, he's going to keep playing for the most part. You could have him on your bench as a fourth or fifth outfielder. And then once he figures it out, like there's a world where Mitchell really gets going. And as like Adam mentions here, I've been starting Mitchell over guys like Beck, but not Canzone. Beck for sure. Beck is a guy that we might be talking about as a drop next week. If like I don't want to drop Beck, but the Rockies don't want to play him either, which is very hard for fantasy in that case. But I'm trying to give a little more leash to the Jordan Beck situation, because the talent is too good to be blocked by Johnston and company. All right. The next most added player in the NFBCOC is Bryce Elder, pitcher, Atlanta Braves. 137 OCs, as high as 166, as low as a dollar. Average bid of $28, I guess, totally fine for Bryce. In the main events, Bryce Elder picked up in 36 main events, as high as 112, folks. 166 in mains, 112 for Bryce Elder. I love Bryce Elder like the rest of them, but my Atlanta, a low of 15 in main events. Average bid of 47 for Bryce Elder, Ben. Elder's been pitching great in this first two starts, and he finished the season strong. I caught flack all offseason about, like, hey, Bryce Elder's really cheap in DC. He's like, he's not this bad. Yeah, the underlying metrics aren't ideal, but he gets the job done. 13 innings, 2 runs, 0 earned runs, 13 Ks and 2 walks so far this season, Ben. What's your thoughts on Bryce Elder? Because I like him a lot. Some of these prices were a bit much for a guy that I know is going to blow up some ratios in no time.
That's kind of usually what happens with Elder. Yeah, I remember as much as you loved him last year, and I think I kind of joined the bandwagon late in the season. His year-long numbers are still pretty horrible, Elder's. Yeah. But looking at his Fangraphs page, his 11% swing strike rate would be a career high for Elder. He has the estimators are all 2.5 or lower for xFIP. FIP, xERA, what's the Sierra? Sierra is not with the others, 2.63, so right in line with the highest one. So that's awesome. So he's definitely earned his results so far, Elder. But the K rate is 27%, 28% if you round up in these two starts. That's a little inflated. But if he keeps missing as bats at a career high, maybe he could be useful. The Braves will give him run support. But I don't. I started him in a DC this week, Elder, but I did not look to add him anywhere. I don't want to say it's a Charlie Brown gif, but I feel like you're kind of falling for it again potentially by adding Elder for a lot of fab.
Yeah, I started him in a lot of DCs this week. He's one of my. He's not no Patrick Corbin roster rates, but he's up there in my DC world. So he was getting put into a lot of lineups for many reasons. We don't have to go to all of those, but yeah,
you
I like
him this week.
In a couple, not in every league, no.
Well, that's good though.
He was in a couple. And the thing is with Elder, like I like him. He's gonna have his rough outings. That's why he's like more of a streamer for me. Like you don't want to have to pitch him every week if you don't have to. But it feels like if you're paying, you know, $160, you're pitching him, and that's where it's gonna get interesting when things are all said and done. But yeah, I do like some Bryce Elder, but be buyer beware. Same with this next guy, Jansen Junk, added in 133. OCs as high as $73, as low as a dollar, average bid of 17. 42 main event ads as high as 129, as low as 15, an average of 39. Now, I'll let you talk about Junk, but I'd also add to this, Ben, and he's got a two-step this week. That's one reason why people liked him, plus they saw some strikeout gains. But after you talked about Jansen Junk, would you rather have spent the money on Junk or Elder, because he was a lot cheaper in OCs and about the same price, give or take, in main events. So what's your thoughts on Jansen Junk?
He's someone I didn't even look to add as well. Looking at, yeah, his estimators are kind of in line with what I said about Elder. But last year he had Junk had a 17% K rate and across 110 innings. And his good K numbers this year are in 4 1/3. So extremely small sample. I guess one thing though you could look to is that, which I wasn't aware of this looking at it now, but in the one section in Fangraphs, Junk's fastball is 95.3 in his first appearance. It was 93.6 last year, so it's almost 2 miles per hour faster, yep, which is a massive gain. It also could be a massive injury risk, but it's a smaller. You're probably streaming him for the two start week, Junk. And did you say who it was against?
I did not mention it.
Cincinnati, Detroit.
The Reds today in Miami. So that's a big plus already. And he's through 7 innings and only 74 pitches, one run allowed.
Okay. So he kind of came through.
Only three Ks though. So like that whole K thing.
All right.
It's like the Soroka vibe. It's back down to reality.
So it's more results based than skills based, it sounds like. And then the Tigers are good. So if anything, he has a good cushion for the rest of the week, Junk. So it could be a good stream, all things said and done. But going forward, I don't know if I would trust it. I would probably abandon Chip after this week if I did add Jansen Junk. His swing strike rate is actually, well, it's only been 4 innings, but it's 12.7%, which is by far a career best. So yeah, I guess it depends on how it'd be interesting to see how the rest of the week goes for him. But he could be one of those risers. I just had. Maybe it was a blind spot for me, but I wanted nothing to do with him.
Yeah, the velo thing was like widely people were all, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And I'm like, yeah, he's another guy I have a few shares of in like the 47th round of draft champions, but I put low bids. I Lance McCullers type, maybe even lower bids this week. So I don't think I got Junk. We'll obviously recap here in a few. TJ Rumfield of the Colorado Rockies picked up at 120 OCs, as high as 155, as low as a whopping dollar, as you'd expect. Rumfield's average was 29 in OCs. They have three in Coors to start the week. A lot of righties on tap, which means Rumfield should be playing. And he's actually just been playing really well so far. He hits fifth pretty much every, he has been fifth every game, first base or DH for the Rockies, hitting 345 with two home runs, Ben. Like, he has forced the hand. Another reason why Jordan Beck can't play is because guys like Rumfield is hitting well enough to stay on the diamond. There's a reason he's not available in Mainz. People picked him up last week for the first few games in Coors. It made sense. So the OCs are always a step behind. And he got added this week. So I had bids in again, but didn't get him. But what are your thoughts on Rumfield?
Yeah, I had one bid in for him. And also it was with his teammate, Troy Johnston. I didn't get either one. It's all right, though. So far he's... they've only played, what, a series in Coors, I think?
Yep, this is this past weekend. Yep.
Yeah, and then tonight starts the second one. So you can't really say he's been boosted up by Coors yet, Rumfield, but the underlying numbers aren't very good so far. His exit velo, his average exit velocity is 8th percentile, 84.3%. But the barrel rate is above average slightly. Not striking out all that often, so he has a good XBA because of that, Rumfield. And I'd be interested, but he's a lefty. Let me pull up their roster resource. He's probably in a platoon as well.
They say he's in a platoon, but he's played all but one game so far this year.
Yeah, that one was versus a righty on Saturday. Versus a lefty on Saturday. So it seems like it so far, but there's only been one, it looks like, on their schedule. But actually, no, that doesn't go all the way back, so who knows. But he's an old rookie. He's playing in Colorado, Rumfield. He's about to be 26. There's a chance he could be serviceable, but those underlying metrics I mentioned aren't the best, but Coors could mask it. And while I'll just add that, we were talking beforehand, before the show started recording, how the Rockies have so many options. So if Rumfield shows any slight decline or he goes into any sort of slump, he could lose playing time. But with these prices, it wasn't a lot to ask at $29 on average in the OCs. So it's not a bid that's going to hurt you. I just don't feel like he's going to be anything special.
Yeah, I'm just actually shocked that you mentioned that at the end there the prices are actually reasonable, because I figured people would see his numbers. They missed out on the first weekend in Coors. Now I got another weekend. We see a lot of Coors spending for no reason, but this was actually rather reasonable. Like, I wouldn't have gone the one fit, but an average of 29, that's not horrible at all, especially in OCs. All right, the one I've been waiting to talk about all show, Mark Vientos of the New York Mets, picked up in 119 OCs, as high as 102, as low as a dollar, average bid of $30. Honestly, I thought he was going to go for more money just because of the chatter. In main events, he was added in 46 leagues, as high as 174, as low as 26. Love that, the low is 26. That's actually nice. Average $64 in main events. So the main event bidders went a little crazier there. Not saying in a bad way. They just went more. Vientos has played at least the last six games at first base or DH, righties and lefties. Injuries have helped with the situation. Side note, the big dumper just hit a home run. He's back, folks. But Mark Vientos hitting .476, Ben, with a home run over his first 23 plate appearances. But more importantly, he's only striking out 13% of the time right now. Like, who is this guy? And he struggled during the spring, which is really bizarre right now. What's your thoughts on Vientos? I know this is a guy that I wanted to get, and I didn't. And his price has varied a lot. This is one of the guys, when I said at the top of the show, Ben, certain guys' prices varied a lot league to league. This was one of them in a big way. So what was your thoughts, and how did the Vientos shopping go for you?
I got him in all three main events, so I was very interested.
Went very well. Good.
Yep, it went very well. Hopefully the results are there now. So with Vientos, yeah, you mentioned he played six straight, and there was some nuance to that. Tuesday, which started him playing Tuesday the 31st, some days off for like Polanco, for example. Then they went against two lefties, so he played for Beatty on those 2 days. Then on Friday the 3rd, Polanco was hurt. Vientos started that game. Then after that, Soto was hurt. And so then Beatty played those last two games, Saturday, Sunday. So there was an injury or a platoon in place for him. But when the Soto injury came out today. I think the IL came out today, that news. So going into last night, I was going off of, okay, he still played six in a row. and he's performed.
Yep.
So that's why I was willing to take the risk. And also Vientos was like a top 100 pick roughly 2 years ago, I think, or a year ago, whatever it was. And if I can get him in fab for less than $100, I'd spend a little bit over in the one, but I'll explain why when we get to our ads. It seemed like a no-brainer to take this chance because he has massive power. He had 27 homers. And I'll admit that after that year, we were talking about Vientos. I remember it was like a homer to fly ball show. And he had like the highest in the majors. So naturally he was going to regress. But if you can add someone like that in fab where he could just be a 25 homer bat, it's massive. Third base is rough. I've said that before with Max Muncy. So, and that was Soto. It's just like the best case scenario where Vientos has 2 to 3 weeks at a minimum to carve out playing time. Cause he's probably going to DH or play first in all those games. Now that Soto's hurt. Cause then Polanco will be first or DH. And then Beatty can go to the outfield as long as he's doing fine. And but he, I think he's supposed to be back tonight, Beatty, or tomorrow night when they play on Tuesday. So yeah. And also I'll just add last thing before I let it, let you have it back. The Statcast is awesome for Vientos. The only thing, ironically, that's his worst slider is his barrel rate. So I would expect that to tick up because you mentioned he's not striking out. His XBA is 99th percentile, 366. His XWOB is 428. XLUG 576. So he's just smoking the ball right now. Still only 26. So I figured this is what FAB is meant for, to take chances on guys like this.
And that last sentence right there summed up my thoughts on it. That I said I need to be more aggressive. Apparently I was not aggressive enough on this one. I barely missed him in one league, which was very frustrating. I remember you changed your bids and all of a sudden it worked for, like, there's a lot of this and that going on. And this is one of the ones, to your point, this is what FAB's for, to find a potential game changer. Cause I think we all said it. And this is what made me laugh. Cause when I was setting DCs today, I think I have like 4 shares of him. Cause I did like him. I liked the price. I liked the ability to hit 30 home runs. Things obviously weren't working out and playing time was in question. So during draft season, wasn't in on him. No one was. That's why he was available everywhere. But this is the guy, we know the skills are there. It was playing time and will it click? And if it does, this is a phenomenal pickup at this point of the season. A lot can change. But like out of all the guys we've talked about, like the Max Muncy, the Garrett Mitchell, I think Muncy could put together something pretty nice out of that. But Vientos has that ceiling that is going to be tough to match. He ain't going to steal bases, but he'll do a lot else for you. All right, Ben, I'm going to shift to main event most added guys just to hit on a couple more players, if that's cool with you. Or did you have anybody else in the OC roles to talk about?
Let me look. I'm not muted. We have, yeah, no one that we haven't talked about before. It's just funny seeing Brandon Marsh available in 85 leagues.
Yep, 85 leagues getting picked up. That's the OC role for you. He's a streamer in OCs for the most part.
Yeah. Dylan Beavers right below him, he seems to be playing a lot. So I actually had a bid in for him in one of my mains, and I think I got Vientos instead. But I had a pretty healthy bid on Beavers. Nothing too crazy, though.
Yeah, Beavers went 83 OCs, as high as 129, as low as a buck, average 26. He is getting time for now, so that's a beauty. And honestly, Colton Cowser ain't doing much, so there's going to be a point where they might just pull the pin on that one. Talking main events, though, the most added player in the main events, Troy Johnston. We said his name because you said you put bids in on Rumfield and Johnston. Johnston was added in all there's 50. How many main event teams? 57? No,
there's 60 this year.
60 because Taylor's 15 times dummy, can't make 57. But he was added in 57 leagues, main event leagues, as high as 99, as low as $4 for Troy Johnston, average bid of 34. Johnston has been leading off, hitting clean, like he didn't clean up tonight. He's been all over the lineup for the Colorado Rockies, and more importantly, similar to Rumfield, not the same, he's hitting 280, home run, not striking out a ton, OBPs, 308. Like, it doesn't sound great, but the way the Rockies are playing, he's one of their best hitters right now. So what's your thoughts on this? Because you said you put moves in on Rumfield and Johnston. Like, in 15s, I had bids in on Johnston down the waterfall, but there was zero chance I was spending the, like, 99 even. Like, the average of 34, yeah, okay, I guess. I was more in the low 20s to high teens probably for Johnston for me.
Yeah, I think I was around $18 in my – I think it was the Listener League auction where I had a bid in for Johnston because, to your point, he wasn't really – well, actually, no, he was available in mains, but I wasn't looking for too many outfielders, which is what he's eligible as. I believe he's outfield only. but he should be getting first base soon because he has his eligibility is at 4 games. He's at 4 in the outfield, 4 at first. So give him a little time, and Johnson should get first base soon, which would be very helpful. His Statcast is slightly better than Rumfield's, but he's also 28, and this is his second year, Johnston, which should make you a little cautious because those late bloomers sometimes don't stick. They could have a short, good season, but I don't know. There's been plenty that have kind of been a flash in the pan, and that's it. But his underlying numbers, Johnson, aren't that terrible. He has, like we said before with Rumfield, they haven't really had a lot of time in Coors yet, so it could get even better, especially if he's hitting leadoff and fourth versus Rice, which has kind of been the how Johnson's been alternating. He even played versus the lefty on Saturday. He hit seventh, which is fine. He'll take that. And then the last thing I'll say, he has a history of a decent barrel rate. So last year in 121 plate appearances, Johnson had a 9.3% barrel rate. So far it's 10%. So he has some power, good XBAs around 270 both years in small samples. But yeah, he definitely makes a lot of sense. And is he on the OC list? That's the question. Yeah, he's down there.
He's way
down. So if he has a good week, he's only added 94 leagues. I could see Johnson being an OC talking point next week potentially.
Yeah, because they'll probably come back to Coors next weekend, and then that'll be a whole other situation there. Always, that's why I wanted to bring up some main event ones, because they'll be coming soon, especially this one. Jose Fernandez of the Diamondbacks picked up in 49 main events, as high as $69, as low as a buck, average of 33. He's another one where the kind of, I guess, what people thought of him varied quite a bit. In OCs, added in 33 leagues, as high as 82, as low as a buck. Played the last two games over the weekend. He played two when he got called up, sat for two. He's all over the place, but first base, DH, he's played some third base. Young kid, hit two home runs out the gate. There's a lot of talent there. Playing time is the question. He's got called up when Pavin Smith went on the IL. So I didn't really know what to do with him. Like, I'm like, do I trust the playing time? How long does he stay up? Like, there's a million questions. Where were you at on Jose Fernandez? Because, like, I wanted to bring him up to the same point I mentioned with Johnston. He'll be widely available next week in OCs. If he plays even 5 games this week, like, that's going to be huge. Where in main events, he's pretty much bon voyage now.
Yeah, I had a bid in for him in one league, Fernandez, but it wasn't for a lot of money, and I forget who I got instead of him. But looking at his minor league stats, he had 17 homers last year, 12 RBIs, 272 average, 122 games in AA. Which, and he's only 20. So that's his debut. So he's 22, Fernandez. So that's pretty good numbers in AA for a 22-year-old, I think. But yeah, the playing time isn't there. You look at roster resource, they think Adrian Del Castillo is going to be the one-for-one replacement for Carlos Santana. And he's struggled. He's had his shares of ups and downs. So it's not like he's a movable object in Jose Fernandez's way. They actually still have Santana in the lineup. What was his injury, Bubba? Do you recall?
No, he left. He's day to day right now. He's not even out yet. He left Sunday's game, I believe, with I want to say ankle or calf. I'll find out for you.
Yeah. So just hearing that he left the game, Santana, I assumed that he was going to be on the IL because he is 40, but it looks like nothing is certain yet. So I wouldn't have gone too crazy on Fernandez just because the playing time isn't there, and it looks like it may not be there yet either. So I would, but for his bids, he went for 33. I was actually closer to the 17, which is the 25th percentile. So I probably wasn't. Yeah, that's why I wouldn't have gotten him anyway, most likely. So I don't know. And also, like you are too, I'm typically down on rookies. So if he's not playing full time and you don't know how he'll translate to the majors, I don't want to be too invested in that.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions I have with him. Like, yeah, he's hits the snot out of the baseball. There's good, bad, and ugly, but I don't know what to expect. And the playing time was a concern when I was looking at him. A couple more here. Mark Leiter Jr. added in 48 main events, as high as 116, as low as a dollar. He got the save last week, but then he didn't even pitch the ninth, I believe, on Sunday. So he's all over the place with what to expect there. We knew the A situation would be all actually blew the save on Sunday. Sorry. There was two blown saves though. So see, depends when that takes place. We got the save on Tuesday, which looked like a real bullpen game in that one. I mentioned 116 max dollar min in the main event, average of $33. He was added in 100 OCs as well. Max of 200. Low was a dollar, average 25. Like, the average 25 in the OCs, average 33 in the mains, totally cool with. I could even go to the $50 in the 75th percentile in main events. Okay. He's not going to be the full-time guy. I'd be shocked if he is. Let's put it that way. And so to spend $200 in an OC on Mark Leiter Jr. after we just talked about Soto and Brian Baker, who had lower maxes than Leiter Jr., bonkers.
Yeah, someone who watched Leiter on the Yankees a year or two ago, I know he's not a closer. So I just think he's my age too. So actually a little bit older than me, but I'm not that young in baseball years anymore. So he's past his prime, and he has a 2.45 K per nine, which is a 5.6% K rate, which matches his walk rate right now. So Leiter is going to get destroyed whenever he pitches in Sacramento. His swing strike is 7.8%. It was actually good the last 3 years. I think that's why people liked him as a reliever. That's why the Yankees went out and got him, but he's not good anymore. So I would not have spent any – this is a bullpen. Unless they give it to Justin Sterner, I do not want anything to do with the A's bullpen. So I would have passed on Leiter.
Yeah, and I actually dropped Sterner this past week. We'll get to that here pretty soon. I'm over the whole A's situation. Should have never been in on the A's situation. I'm going to talk about some of the most dropped players now, Ben, before we talk about our ad and drops for the week. On the online championship, some of the top drops, Cody Ponce, obviously on the 60 IL, gone. Zach Eflin, probably gone. Jordan Lawler, he's out for like 2 to 3 months. Makes sense. Justin Verlander, hip impingement to the IL. Yeah, in a 12. Makes sense. Tyler O'Neill, Ben. Tyler O'Neill was dropped in 131 OCs. Now, this is not me trying to make a ringing endorsement for Tyler O'Neill. It's more of a talking point of Tyler O'Neill, who primarily platoons, but he played the last two games versus right-handed pitching, which is a plus. Something to keep in mind if that actually starts to happen. Only hitting 150 with one home run, but this is the Tyler O'Neill experience, Ben. So what are your thoughts on seeing him get dropped for in 131 OCs?
I'm not surprised to see this because Dylan Beavers was one of the most added, and I think it kind of just shows the playing time trend. Beavers has played 4 of 6 versus righties, whereas O'Neill sat 3 of 6 versus righties. And today they gave some regulars days off, including Beavers and Basayo and Blaze Alexander in the Monday night lineup for the Orioles. So that kind of helps O'Neill get in there again. But yeah, if he's going to be short side platoon and he's not even performing, there's definitely no need to roster him anywhere.
Chris Bassitt dropped in 111 leagues. He's been atrocious. And yeah, that was a talking point in a lot of chats. I still have some in 15s. I couldn't bring myself to drop him, Ben, but like, were you in the drop Chris Bassitt mode, I guess, if you were rostering Chris Bassitt?
I was in the do not draft Chris Bassitt mode after last year. So
that's fair. Very fair. Kobe Mayo was dropped in 105 leagues. That experiment has not gone well. Dustin May is not good. We could have told you that beforehand. He's dropped in 100 leagues. Marcelo Zuna dropped in 90 leagues. I have had him either on the drop block or he's on my benches everywhere, Ben, because he has been putrid right now.
He was actually the drop in my listener league for Johnson and Rumfield, but I did not get either. So Ozuna to the bench for Spencer Steer.
Hey, that's not a bad upgrade right now. And then Jacob Lopez dropped in 89 leagues. Kirk dropped in 87, which you kind of expect. And then Ryan Stanek dropped in 86. When people realize he's not really the closer. Let's go to the main event.
We told you last week.
Yeah, we warned you guys way ahead of time on that one. That was one of the more silly-looking ads. But again, we do a lot of silly things too. The top main event drops. You expected Ponce. You expected Eflin. Verlander dropped in 51 leagues. Jared Triolo dropped in 36, Ben. He went to the IL. Jordan Lawler dropped in 32. Carson Williams is gone. He's at 30. Stanek in 30. So these are all pretty standard. I don't see any crazy ones right now. Anybody stand out to you, though, like in a 15 specifically? Like Benintendi dropped in 22 leagues. I know I had him on the chopping block. Anybody that really surprised you in 15s, because they might not even be rostered in OCs, but in 15s, you just want playing time and depth. So what's your thoughts on some of these names? Because for the most part, at least the top portion kind of checks out.
Walker Buehler kind of is surprising considering he gets the Road Rockies this week. Granted, he wasn't good his first go around, what I would have maybe have wanted to play him potentially in this matchup. But if he's, he could just be toast anyway. So, I forget if I actually dropped Buehler, because I did have him in a main event and I had a list to drop him. I have to remind myself once we go to do through our ads if I actually dropped him or not. But half the leagues is kind of interesting. I could be a part of it for all I know. Probably am. Benintendi, despite I made the point in the Discord that he was starting, but they're platooning him as to the book as can be. So if Valetti comes in, he's out of the game, which is kind of frustrating. Chris Martin, not the closer. I still hope it's Robert Garcia, but he blew the save, or he had a bad outing. What else? Alec Thomas, he's always bouncing around.
I was surprised Ramon Marquez. You had him already. Now he's got the two-step this week. And now you got dropped in 19 main events, so that shocked me a little bit.
Yeah, it's the same because he gets the Rockies too, and then he also has the Pirates tonight. And I think
he's thrown five shutout against the Pirates so far. He gets the Road Rockies later this week.
Yeah, that's a questionable drop.
Brandon
Sproat, people drop Sproat now.
Yep, people are getting out on the Sproat game, which I understand. At the same time, in like the 15s, unless you had a viable replacement, like you kind of almost want to hang on and see what happens. I think that's just me. So
I cut him after the first start, and the second one wasn't any better. So I don't feel too bad about cutting him a week before these 17 people did. Sure. Yeah, and then you did mention Lopez. I dropped him in one main. I think I still have him in another one. I just like the K upside, and he's been pretty wild. So I get that drop.
Yeah, and the 15 I have him, and I've held on to him, but definitely not starting him right now. It's I like the skills, but the results have not looked good early on here. So totally get it. All right, Ben, let's do it. While you look up your ad drops for the week, I was going to answer the question for someone in the chat here. They asked about River Ryan. He was added in 5 OCs, as high as 20, as low as $2. In the main event, I saw I changed pages, but I can help you real quick here. River Ryan in main events was added in 15 main events, as high as 65, as low as $14. So people are starting to stash them just in case they give up on the Emmett Sheehan project in LA or somebody else. So there'll be options with River Ryan and company. All right, Ben, what do you got for your ad drops for the week?
All right, first up, we'll do the Listener League auction. This is where I got Liam Hicks. I think let me go to the other page, actually. It's not showing the drops on this one. Added Liam Hicks, dropped Tyler Stevenson, 48 to 27. I figured there's more upside with Hicks. I gave Stevenson a shot again, and he's hitting 143 again. So
he just went yard 2 minutes ago.
That sounds about right. So.
Sorry, I was like literally just what you
know. All right. That's how these things go sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it's all right, though. I trust that Hicks will go yard again. So that was 48 to 27. And then this is also the one where I got shut out on Ozuna, I mentioned. So just that one seemingly bad ad right now. And then going to the New Jersey main event. So this is the big bid of the week for me. This is my first time adding Mark Vientos. I dropped Jordan Westberg, so no regrets dropping him. I had my bid at 108 until about 958, and then I changed it to 114, runner-up of 109. So I would have lost by a dollar if I didn't change my bid last minute. Just had a gut feeling. And I didn't see him say this, or he didn't reach out to me. I didn't reach out to him, but I was told through the grapevine that I think I beat out Mike the Mouth. I think he was a runner-up because he got him for 109, Vientos, in another main event. And he is in this main event. And I bid so high on Vientos, so when we go to my other two main events, the prices are a lot lower on what I bid. Because it's the New Jersey main, I think half the league are Met fans. So I knew he was going to go for a lot in this one. And I really wanted him in this main. I think I needed him the most, so that's why I also bid the most. So that worked out. Hopefully the results are there now. And then my second ad was Foster Griffin. I dropped Brandon Williamson, 24 to 22. Brandon Williamson was bad against the Pirates, so I want nothing to do with his two-start week this week. So I'm like, I'm just going to cut him. And then main event number two, Vientos dropped Kyle Leahy. This was a little bit of an overbid, but it's all right, 88 to 36. So I needed him. I could have used him here, but not as much as the other main event, so I bid a little bit less. And then my other ad, I didn't start him tonight, was Justin Robleski. Dropped Justin Verlander 36-34. So pretty good bid there. I just wanted like a little wait and see. I had some, I think, better options. I probably could have used Robleski over Bubba Chandler so far, but that's all right. There's another star for Chandler. So two ads again. And then in main event three, again, only two ads. I am Hicks here. Got Victor Caratini, I was telling you, but it's for listeners. I kind of punted catcher in this one a little bit. So being able to add Hicks was a no-brainer. 70-29, a little bit of an overspend, but I wanted to make sure I got him. And then Vientos was actually less than Hicks. I only spent – so in this one, I didn't even start Vientos this week. So I got him, dropped Jacob Lopez here, 64-45. So another close one, relatively speaking. But my corner is Devers. I have Austin Riley, Yandy Diaz. And this is my league with – because I added Hicks, I have – Ivan Herrera as utility. So I decided to play Herrera at utility over Vientos just because hopefully at least Herrera gets his eligibility in like a couple more weeks. And then I have Vientos if he ends up being a thing. So this is one of those ads where it's kind of going to a listener question eventually, but I just wanted the best player potentially. And it wasn't a need for Vientos. I just wanted to try to get the best player looking down the road. Okay. If he does stick around and my other corners are good and then I can move Herrera to catcher, I have a stud in my utility. So it was just more of a acquire talent type ad in that scenario. So that was it. Basically two ads for all the leagues except for the listener league.
Beautiful. All right. For me, the Vegas listener league, I got a Carmen Majinski. I have had a lot of bids in on him. I'm a big believer in what we're seeing. I dropped Jacob Lopez in this one. It's 12 team league, $14 runner up bit of a buck. So that was awesome. But I just want to mention, Majinski has a pretty good matchup, I believe, later this week, but I just like his overall skills here. Two starts. He's only gotten 4 1/3 and 4 2/3. He hasn't gone deep yet, but 9 innings, 4 in runs, 13 Ks to 3 walks. Like, the skills are very, very good. I'm hoping they finally let him get to the innings you want him to get to, but he was great out of the pen and even starts last year for the Pirates. He's been really good in the minors. Like, there's a lot to like in my mind about Majinski, so I was starting to add him on the waterfalls. But then in this 12-teamer, I dropped Kyber Ruiz, and I picked up Danny Jansen, 4-3. I'm going to start just streaming that catcher two situation there. Kyber Ruiz, who I do like, I still think I'll probably use him throughout the year at different times, hitting .222 with one home runs, but more importantly, it wasn't the production so much, it was the playing time with Kyber Ruiz, because he is literally starting and sitting every other game right now. And he's sharing time with Drew Milos. Like, at least have Ford up there if you're going to make Kyber Ruiz sit. So that one kind of flustered me. And so when I saw the playing time, I was like, that's it. Not going to do this. Not the 12 where there's actually potential replacements. So we ride with Danny Jansen for now. I know this roller coaster, he's either going to get hurt or he's going to start to suck. But he's hitting .250. He has a homer, striking out 25%. He's doing Danny Jansen things. Actually hitting .250 is not Danny Jansen. That's actually good for Danny Jansen. So I figured I'd give him a world because he's at least playing like every 2 out of 3 games right now. So he's the primary catcher in Texas. So I dropped Kyber Ruiz for Danny. I was actually putting the $4. I was shocked the runner-up was 3. I didn't think anybody else would care about that. So they must have been a Kirk owner or something. My Vegas auction. This is where things got annoying. I mentioned in the our little chat, a ton of moves were made in this league. I can't even count them. I have to scroll up and down to get to them. I was the runner up to one Phil Dussault, I believe, in Vientos. Phil got him for 45. My bid was 37. Like, Liam Hicks went for 44. A lot of stuff going on here. I only got one move this week because it was way down my waterfalls. I dropped Luis Morales of the A's. He's been so bad. I got Caleb Killian for $1. Here's the spec we're talking about. You talked about you kind of landed on random guys. Caleb Killian has been very good in the Giants bullpen. I like Keaton Wynn a lot too. I guess is where it'll be interesting. But what I do know is Ryan Walker has struggled a ton, which is shocker to nobody. But they also have used him in like the sixth inning and other just wacky situations. And Caleb Killian so far this season has thrown 4 innings, no hits, no runs, no walks, 5 Ks. He's looked filthy. Like, really, really good stuff there from Mr. Killian. And if you want to go even deeper here, 12% K rate or swinging strike rate isn't great, but he's getting a chase rate of 37%. Like, he's looking pretty good and could sneak into some saves if Walker continues to struggle. And in that league is where I have Griffin Jacks as my RP2. So if I can get a Killian for a buck to get some saves, that'll help. I should have been more aggressive on certain stuff, but like Soto wasn't available. Most like Baker wasn't available. I didn't have many options in the saves world. My Olak, I got Herman Marquez, dropped Sean Manaea, who's not even going to start anytime soon, 7-0, no runner-up bid. Then I picked up Kyle Isbell, dropped Connor Norby, 7-4. I like Norby, but I have so many corner infielders. Like, he's just a waste of my roster, and I could use Isbell in the outfield while he's swinging it well, and then I'll be ready to drop him when the time comes, but he's playing extremely well. But when the Bloom Listener League, I added Herman. No, that's the same one. I have, isn't it updated? Oh, there he goes. Love when the Bloom Listener League got Isbell, dropped Manzardo 6-5. So not much there. Cam Smith was available in that league, went for 137. That's a nice add. In my OC, I got Eric Lauer, dropped Zach Eflin 9-8. Got Carmen Majinski, dropped Justin Sterner 8-0. So that was nice. And then, yeah, just the rest are Barf and TGFBI. Let's just see if TGFBI had runner-up bids this week, because we talked about that last week. That did not happen. A little more. I got Loperfido 5-0, Lauer 13-8. There's a little more going on there this week, which was good to see. All right, Ben, a couple listener questions here. We got one from the Twitterverse I will throw up here from our buddy Joe G. Ben, Joe G's got one. Trevor Story's on waivers. Is he a must-grab in a 12-team Roto league?
I would say so.
I would say so, too. He's struggling to start. He struggled last year as well, and we saw what happened. That's just who Trevor Story is. In a 12-team league, you take that chance. It's kind of like you mentioned with we have fab for players like Vientos. You have fab for players like Trevor Story to make an impact on your team. All right, let's get to the Discord questions now, and we'll kick it off with Canton Dog. I do it on purpose now, folks. What is a good percentage of your fab that you should spend and win for the top hot rookies in NFBC when they become available? The good old, you know, what's the rhyme or reason for fab, Ben? What do you recommend? Because you and I usually don't spend money on rookies anyways.
No, I try to avoid the hot rookie because I feel like there's a good chance they're going to bust. Of course, you may land with Nick Kurtz, or you end up getting Jack Caglianone, and then
talk to Ryan.
Yes, Ryan could explain firsthand of the issues with bidding big on a rookie, but I'll give him some numbers. So last year, Kurtz was an average of like 290. I think some may have been even lower because he was fabbed ahead of time in the early weeks where he wasn't up yet. So that could have been skewed, actually. So he's more like a $300 bid. So that's like the... So I think if Connor Griffin was available, he would have been like a 250 to 300 average bid, for example. Then last year there was Goose. He was like 252, top catcher who can run. Chase Burns was 220. Mizorowski was just below Chase Burns. Jack Cags, we mentioned, was 150, but that's because he was added 70 times. There was 57 main events last year. So there were some re-adds after he got dropped that probably dropped the price down. Also, time of year can matter too, because – for example, Yuri Perez he wasn't really a rookie last year, but he went for 137, but he was up later in the year when there was less money to go around.
True.
For example. So the big guys are 200 plus, at least if they're early. And then like the elite, Connor Griffin, Bobby Witt Jr., Nick Kurtz, those guys are $300. So that's why I try to avoid that, because I'm not trying to spend a quarter or a third of my fab on one player if I can help it.
Yep, I agree. That's a great way of breaking it down with using those numbers there. And I just give Ryan a hard time because he's mentioned the CAGs thing a million times and he's embraced that thing.
But he was past it, probably.
Well, it's just a perfect example of the risk-reward of any fab, let alone prospect fab, because you just really don't know how it'll translate to the big league level. Adam Brunson says, have either of you added a position player you feel is more than just filling a need or a streamer type? I have not. I think it's because most were drafted, and what say you? So, like, this is your Vientos point here. So, like, usually we talk about when you make add drops, it's to fill a team need currently on your roster, but you are going to explain why that's not always the case.
Right. So, in my first main, where I bid the most on Vientos, I came out of the draft with the third baseman of Carlos Correa and Josh Young because I was late to fill third base. So that was an obvious potential upgrade. I still have both of them on my roster, Correa and Young, but I took a third baseman in Westbrook in case he came back at the end of this month. That wasn't the case. He's not throwing anything. So I'm like, okay, Vientos for Westbrook, easy, one for one. Vientos is in my corner infield for this week. The next main, I had to remind myself. So I have Christian Walker, Matt Chapman, Yordan, who's util only for right now, and I have Jake Berger. So my four possible spots have legit starters at them for my corners and my utility. But this week, I'm actually playing Vientos over Berger because Berger's facing the Mariners' big three of Gilbert, Wu, and Kirby. So I said, okay, I'll take Vientos against the Diamondbacks versus Berger in Texas, mind you, against those three. So that's more of a luxury to have Vientos in this league. I didn't really need him, but if Yordan can get outfield eligibility relatively quickly, then I put Yordan on my outfield and I have Chapman, Walker, Berger, and Vientos, hopefully, in my four spots where they can all fit. So that's another luxury. And then same thing with my third main. I mentioned it on air, but I have Ivan Herrera here, and this is the league where I added Liam Hicks. So if Herrera gets a catcher, he's out of my utility. And this is one where I sat Vientos because I wanted to play Herrera this week, and then I have Yandy Diaz, Austin Riley, and Rafael Devers. So there's no room for Vientos, but foreseeing the Herrera to catcher down the road, then I can end up playing Vientos if he's still around and producing. So, and this one I only bid like 64 on him. So it wasn't like I spent a whole lot on Vientos. So I going into this year, it's easy to fall into like what you said, the one for one upgrade or injury replacement. I want to try to be more about adding the best players early on and not go too crazy though, too. Cause like, yeah, I spent a lot of money on Vientos, for example, but I didn't make any moves the first week and the two mains that had drafted before the first fab. So that's $38 I had saved that I could afford to spend this week, for example. And even with the third main, that wouldn't happen after fab. But what my point is, like, all my average spends per week going forward are still kind of in line, minus a couple dollars compared to when you start out at the year. So I didn't overdo it with Vientos necessarily because I hadn't really spent a lot before last night. So just trying to see that big potential hit if I can afford it. And it's a little crowded for now, like I said, but there's an avenue on those two other teams where I can end up using Vientos every week potentially.
No, and it makes sense. Like, yeah, a lot of us fall into the trap because if there's injuries or you just want to fill out your roster with the same, because it's a thing year after year. We talk about accumulating stats. People say, well, how do you build your bench? Well, I want, you know, this CI, this MI, this outfield, so on and so forth. There's also a point where you just need production, period. Like, is it worth the stash? Like, in the league where you're not even starting Vientos, it's one of those things. It's like real life. If he could force his way onto your roster. If he starts hitting, like, you're going to find a spot for him. Like, we were talking before the show, I have a couple, like, I have some Fab League, I think a couple DCs where Matt Chapman has only played, like, one part of a week for me so far this year. And I never thought that would be the case drafting Matt Chapman, but he struggled and other guys are showing up and we're just playing what's working for, you know, matchups right now. And that's just kind of what you can do with Vientos. And yeah, in the end, it's like you can do the best player available approach. Like, you can't do that for your entire bench because you do need some volume to come out of your bench, but you can definitely, it's almost like a stash in theory. Like, hey, I'm going to go grab this guy to see where things work and except he's healthy and hopefully becomes a stud. So, yeah, no, I get it. You can definitely do stuff like that. It works in the pitching world as well. There's lots of ways to go about that. So it doesn't always have to be that scenario. Last question we have here, Dr. Doom says, how do you figure out the dollar amount you bid on players? Is it feel? Do you have a spreadsheet? Do you start at auction prices? I definitely overbid my first few weeks. And this is a good question because, there's a lot of the Discord that it's like their first year playing the NFBC because of the auction leagues, and there's a lot of those kind of fab questions, and it seems like every year we get these questions from different people, Ben. And the best thing I will say, and you might have a better approach to it, is there's no rhyme or reason half the time. There is an approach you can make that everyone has a different approach, but in the end, like we talked about certain players, prices are all over the place. It just depends on what your league you're in, and that's just the bottom line. So what advice would you give on that? Because I think we could probably line up 10 different players and just like, you know, the old you know, show where you're just your black silhouette and it's like they muffle your voice, and you got 10 different players and probably have 10 different answers on how this goes.
Yeah, you're probably right there. So the one thing I always say when we talk about this type of stuff is I always pay what you feel comfortable paying for someone. Like I may have overspent on Liam Hicks in that one main event, but I wanted to get him and I'm fine with being over by like $40, whatever it was. It's going to happen. You don't have a crystal ball. You can't know for sure what's going to be the runner up bid or the next closest to you. But a lot for me though, cause this is what my sixth time in the main event now, which is kind of wild to say, seventh year in the NFBC. It's awesome. I just have experience with doing fabs. I kind of know where what kind of players go for how much on average. But for someone new, and this came from the Discord, so this actually is a helpful answer, I think, is just now looking at Ryan's tracker, see what kind of money certain players are going for. It could be like a two-star streamer, a rookie, or someone who has dropped. So maybe it was only added in like two leagues because they shouldn't have been dropped. Maybe they go for a lot of money. Like Trevor Story, for example, if he was added last week, maybe he goes for 225 next week. So you kind of get that idea for someone who shouldn't be available. There's tons of different kinds of players that are, I'll say archetypes of players where you could have like a corner, like a streaming corner, I don't know, a platoon bat, a speed guy. There's all these different player profiles that have different bid ranges. Kind of more often than not, of course, every player is an exception, but they could have like someone with staying power, for example. So you just kind of have to, it's not going to help you right now since it's like you're in the heat of the battle now, but over time you'll get more used to the prices. Then also there's like a curve where, like I mentioned before, it starts out kind of slow, then it spikes up in the early weeks, and then it gradually decreases as money goes down. So a player in week 18 isn't going to go for the same amount as they would have in week 5. It's all things equal except for time. It's just because there's less money available. So you have to account for that too. So it's a lot of experience. And like I said, maybe look at Ryan's tracker for a little guidance, but it's not going to be perfect.
Yeah. Nothing's ever perfect. Experience does help. And you mentioned like, how much are you willing to spend on a player? Like if you overspend on a guy, but you believe in the skills, that is what it is. Like you got your guy. Like you just mentioned it with Hicks. Guilds is the perfect example of that. Guilds never cares if he overspends like even $100, and the guy's pretty darn successful. So like, you know, does he in his own quiet room, does he potentially go, it would be nice to have like $80 back? Probably. But at the same time, like he gets his guys and you go do your thing and see where it goes. So you can definitely go that route. To the tracker point that Ryan put together, Ben mentioned, like by the certain week, it starts coming down. It looks like anywhere between week 14 and 16, you start to slowly see the decline. And this is what Ben's talking about, will help you. Like you can maybe be a little more aggressive this time of year, because as the season goes on, the average pricing starts to go down. So you can still play and get your guys, or get some guys, I should say. So there's no rhyme or reason. A lot of it's just experience and feel, and knowing what like team needs makes me want to spend more on certain guys, so on and so forth on that one. And trust me, in my AC right now, that the Vegas auction, every week, it's the first time where I'm like, man, what should I spend? Because like, this is a totally different animal compared to other things. Like your competition makes a big difference as well. So there's no rhyme or reason. Don't beat yourself up on it. Like it's all over the board, league to league, week to week. Just do what you feel comfortable with is the probably best advice we can give you here. All right, Ben, we'll wrap it up there. Week 3 fab in the books. Any final thoughts as We're rolling now in baseball season. It's go time.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with my spending this week. I just hope I'm confident with Vientos. I think he needs a chance, and hopefully I'm right. But it's just good to. This was like the first time I actually really spent up for a couple players. So hopefully, it's easy to you want to keep spending as guys appear, but you've got to be disciplined and pick your spots. That's the biggest part, picking your spots, knowing what your team needs, and like knowing who probably is going to hit, has the highest chance of hitting.
Yep.
Literally, totally, I guess, and figuratively.
Literally and figuratively. Yeah, no, this was the, like I said, the $1,600 auction, really, the fab did not go. I knew there would be weeks like this, and I had waterfalls, and it was not enough. So it's a combination of the waterfalls being enough and actually just bidding more, apparently, or less. It just depends on what I do. So, it's a
what did you really want that you didn't get? I know you mentioned Vientos. Did you really want him?
I did want him. just because I got that power upside. But let me pull back up the I guess it's not so much like I really like really wanted guys. It's just I was just barely getting out big because the max bid in the league was Vientos for $45. No one went for higher than that in the league. It was just everyone peppers does. So I actually wasn't that far off from a lot of the bids. It was just like, you know, Jose Fernandez went for 14. I think I might have been the runner up at 11. It was just like little things like that. I was just missing on guys. And it makes me have to sit back and be like, huh, okay, how do I go about this situation, I guess, to have just enough more, like the way you upped your Vientos bid that you talked about at the last minute. Like, how do I get that urge to like, hey, let's change things up a bit here? Or to your point, to your advice you gave is, hey, just go spend more to make sure you get your guy. Like stuff like that. Like Vientos, maybe I should have spent $76 and like almost doubled Phil's bid, but I got Vientos now. Like things along those lines. So that's the weird part. It's like I said, every league was different. I guarantee you we could look at different leagues and the max bid is not even, it's like $300 for certain players. So this league wasn't a heavy spending league, but they were very active in their spending. And that's what makes it challenging, I guess, in my world.
We only have like three Hall of Famers in there and a surefire fourth. So I don't know why it would be tough.
Yeah, no, I don't know why either. It's just an absolute, yeah, it's fun. Good times. Like I said, the draft I wasn't worried about is the 27 wins.
This is what you said.
Impact. Yeah, and it only took this the third week to be like, ah, awesome.
It's happening.
Yes. Here we go. So, yeah, it's going to be a long, long year, and we'll talk about it every episode, I guarantee you, because it will not be the last time this happens, or I'll flip the script, and like I said, I'll spend way too much and be like, oh, crap. Here we go. So it'll be a weekly conundrum, and we'll have you guys covered here. We'll be back next week, recapping week four. Make sure you follow Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm at BD Entrick. Until next time, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 844. Catch y'all later.